just this morning when I woke up, I poured some coffee in my cup. Whoa, whoa, what a surprise. I could tell you weren't there, I could see it in your eyes. Even though you were right beside me, it always feels like you're off with him. So pretty baby, tell me where you've been. Love me like you should or don't love me at all. We climbed too far up and it's a long way to fall. It's just been you and I for so dang long. Still the only one that turns me on. I see you with my own eyes. She's got an angel smile, but she's a devil in disguise. I wanna know if you even love me at all. To be a long way to fall. I love the days when I pick you up, pull out the drive as you hop in my truck. We say, whoa, whoa, all night long, cause the DJ's playing our favorite song. It don't matter if it's rain or shine, as long as I've got you right by my side, everything is gonna be alright. Love me like you should or don't love me at all. We climb too far up and it's a long way to fall. It's just been you and I for so dang long. You're still the only one that turns me on. I see you with my own eyes. She's got an angel smile, but she's a devil in disguise. I wanna know if you even love me at all. Cause it'd be a long way to fall. Should or don't love me at all. We climb too far up, it's a long way to fall. It's just been you and I for so dang long. You're still the only one that turns me on. I see you with my own eyes. She's got an angel smile, but she's a devil in disguise. I wanna know if you even love me at all. Cause it'd be a long.
Special song that has never been released by a very talented singer-songwriter James Cameron from Kitchener, Ontario. James was a very special soul and a wonderful, talented singer-songwriter who lost his battle to mental illness in January of 2020. The Canadian music industry was hit hard with the news of James' passing. He was such a bright light, a huge talent, and had such an incredible future ahead of him in country music. For all of us who knew him, he was so gentle, humble, and kind to everyone he met. He was so alive playing his music for fans who came to hear him and his band, including his incredible, talented sister, Brittany. Man, he loved country music, and the fans loved him. This show is dedicated to those who suffer from mental illness, families that have lost a loved one, a friend, or someone that they know to suicide. This is a very special show that is being held in honor of James Cameron, and to help this night that is so special that is going to be this weekend on June 25th, with very special guests, the Bareback Riders, who also were a big part of James Cameron's life. James Cameron had the pleasure of fronting the Bareback Riders for quite a few years. The Camerons are humbled that the Bareback Riders have chosen this as their final show at the Stampede Ranch. It is my honor and my pleasure to welcome James' father, Ken Cameron, and his sister, Brittany Hagen, here on this very special show tonight to share the legacy of their loved one, James Cameron, and talk about the very special show and online auction that will be taking place on June 25th. It's actually taking place right now, and it goes right through until the 26th. The 25th is where we all can gather to a very special concert that we're going to be talking about. It's so good to have you both on the show. This is a tough one, isn't it?
It is. It's hard to talk about, but something we have to talk about for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ken, for doing this today, both of you for doing this today, because this day has another meaning behind it too. And I know that it's got to be hard, very hard for both of you. And I really appreciate you both coming on the show and asking me to be a part of this.
Oh, you're welcome. And thanks for trying to help us out. I remember you reaching out to me probably about a month or so after James died.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to know if I wanted to come on and just talk about him and his life. And it was just too raw, as mm-hmm. you could imagine, to even try and express, you know, what was running through my mind. And here we sit almost 2.5 years later, and not much has changed on that front.
It doesn't get easier, does it?
You know? No, it likely never will. But, you know, we're finding ways to deal with it, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's like the subject is more approachable for sure, because you want to be able to help other people out there as well. And we've lost so many people to mental illness. And I think that half the battle is so many people don't know what to do when they see somebody struggling, and that stigma that goes along with a mental illness. Am I hitting that right for you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm pretty well known in our community here in Kitchener-Waterloo. And I found myself on several occasions since James died talking to other people who have suffered the same fate as our family. And I don't have any problem reaching out and trying to offer support or a kind word or whatever it might be. But I'm also smart enough to know that I'm not trained in this field.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to do more damage than good, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've all got a long way ahead of us. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're putting on this event next Saturday, is to raise awareness in the community and offer hope, healing, and education. And, you know, and we're just, you know, really happy that you've decided to speak with Brittany and I and help shine a light on this a little bit more.
I think it's so important when we take our platforms and use it to be able to help so many, because music heals in so many ways. And James, my relationship with him was so important to me, because that's the one conversation that we'd have so often, and the role that music played in his life and how he just came to life when he got on stage. And when he would talk about you, Brittany, it was just such a special light. And he's touched so many of us in so many ways. His legacy is so important.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it was like, to say I was lucky to get to sing with him and to have the experiences we did, and to, you know, lock eyes on stage when we hit a killer harmony, you know, it's irreplaceable. And they talk about family harmonies, and I really did feel it was true, because we just had something special up there together for sure. And
he was, so proud of you. He was so proud of you. And there isn't anything like family harmonies. You're so right on that. It's just something that there's a connection there. Let's face it, when you're doing duets, it's not easy. And the role that you have to play with one another when you are playing and singing, you know, together like that. And you guys really delivered on stage. The fans absolutely loved you. We want to talk a little bit about this event first, and then we'll get into some other stuff. But this is a very special event, Brittany, that you've put on. Tell everybody about the 25th, what's happening on the 25th, and then the 26th.
So it's really special in, you know, a few ways for us. First of all, we're going to be there to honor James's memory, and we're going to be there to celebrate being able to get back together. We're going to be out at the Stampede Ranch in Guelph, which was a very regular, you know, stomping ground mm-hmm. for James when he was doing the circuit. And mm-hmm. so that is a very special part of it too. And then just the musical acts that we have lined up, all people, that musicians that James played with throughout his career, and most notably the Bareback Riders, who he got the luck of fronting that band for quite some time. And they're going to be doing a very special show out there at the Stampede Ranch. So it's going to be a fantastic night of not just music, but fundraising, with a live auction for some awesome items we can chat about, and you know, cash 50-50 draws, all that kind of amazing stuff that's going to help us, you know, make a difference and give back to the Waterloo Region Suicide Prevention Council.
Well, so many of us love the Bareback Riders. I've known Colin for such a long time, and it's so special for them to be coming out to do this show. Is this their last show as the Bareback Riders?
That is what we are hearing. Yeah, that is what we've been told, that this is going to be their last show, definitely their last show at the ranch, we believe. So a very special one for them, too. So all their fans, you know, come on out. It's going to be amazing show in that respect as well. And we're also holding them right now. We've actually got it running right now until the 26th. We've got an online auction going as well that's going to supplement everything that's going on that night at the fundraiser.
Now, people can still, they can put their bids into the auction, what, until the 26th, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all kind of QR code driven. We're going to have QR codes on little business cards out of the event that people can just scan and go online to the auction. So it's going to run all through the event on the 25th and then until noon on the 26th, just to give anyone a chance who wakes up the next morning and wants to just get that winning bid in. It's going to run until noon on the 26th.
So where can people go right now? If they're going, is Facebook the best place to go, or tell everybody where they can...
Yeah, so either through the Facebook events, you can search the Red Pants Nation Presents, a concert for hope, healing, and education, or also on Eventbrite. So you can find it both places, and then you're going to link out to our online auction that way, and you can link out to buy tickets to the 25th as well at the Stampede Ranch.
Well, everybody will see it on Now and Then magazine. You're going to see it on the Music's Journey page. You're also going to see it on all of our links as well. And I'll be putting a special article out, you know, for this event too. And you'll see it on my personal page. I'm sure we're going to be seeing it on, well, it's on your page, Ken, as well as on your page, Brittany, right?
Absolutely. We can't thank you enough for helping to spread the word. You. So important. Yeah.
Yeah. And his friends in Lucknow.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Who announced last week that, you know, in the reboot of Music in the Fields, they're renaming the Emerging Artist Showcase the James Cameron Memorial, which takes our breath away, because you know, when he was 18 and Brittany was a little bit older, you know, they won the first Emerging Artist contest and just took the stage like they've been there forever. And he had so many friends up that way, and fans for sure. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the last time he played there, I think, was their 10th anniversary edition, which was about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they contacted the family and asked permission, and of course we granted permission. I mean, it's just such an honor for them to remember him that way. But it was certainly, and Brittany can attest to this, just, you know, probably three of the brightest moments of his career right there in the field in Lucknow. So, you know, we thank them for that. We thank them for everything they did for James.
Mm-hmm. It's such a special community. It's just hard to put into words, but everybody knows each other and everybody cares from their heart. And when we all heard, we were still out that way. And, you know, it was just such a heartache for me, you know, because I've known him for so long. But, you know, so many people were touched by his music, his spirit, just everything about him. So his legacy will be with us forever. And that's one thing I hold dear.
Yeah.
Tell us about the beginning of the journey with James and his music and his influences. And same thing with you, Brittany.
Dad, did you want to go first and chat a little bit about how he got into the music?
Yeah. So James is... people probably don't know this about him, but he was a fantastic athlete, golfer. He was a goaltender, and a little bit of a health scare with his heart ended his hockey career when he was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And he threw himself head over heels into a guitar we had bought him a couple of years before that, but he had never had any time to play it because he was always on the ice. So he started playing it, and Brittany will maybe talk a little bit further about this, but she'd been singing in contests and different events since she was probably 7 or 8 years old. And so, you know, he always looked up to her, and he always wanted to sing with her. And so next thing you know, he's at high school, I think maybe grade 11, and he's put together a band with himself and three other buddies, and Brittany kind of steadying the ship. as the James Cameron Band before he started calling himself the JCB. And man, it was unbelievable the way he did take a few lessons. We actually got him guitar lessons, and I said to his instructor, a fellow named Fred Smith, I said, look, I said, I don't know whether he'd be able to play it or not. I said, but how about I buy him like a 6-pack of lessons and you just be honest with me. And so he went through his first couple of lessons, and after the second lesson, Fred called me and he said, listen, Ken, he says, this kid will not be washing dishes to make a living. I said, oh my God, it's too funny. So away they went playing away. And then he was 18 years old, maybe just turning 19. And they decided they wanted to go to Nashville for the first time. And that story, I mean, thankfully I have these stories, but away we went. We drove to Nashville in a four car caravan. I was going to chaperone them. Brittany was legal enough to drink in the bars, but the rest of the boys weren't even legal in the bars. And they got to play upstairs at Tootsie's.
Oh, wow.
And, oh, it was unbelievable. The place was packed, and the people were going crazy for them. And the fellow who owned the bar, every time they finished a song, he'd get on the PA system. He'd be riling the crowd up. You know, how about these kids from Canada? They're fantastic. And he got them to play like an extra 45-minute set, pushed another band off the stage. And then he offered Brittany and James a chance to come back 3 months later to come back and play. And he owned four bars on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And he said, can you guys come back and we'll keep you busy during CMA Fest?
Nice. Oh, that's
crazy. Like, this can't be happening, right? Because I thought, oh, for sure. You know, it's a little band from St. Mary's High School. And, you know, we're going to put them on a stage at Tootsie's and we're going to see what they're made out of, right?
Wow.
And it was surreal. The whole trip was amazing. And, I mean, that's kind of how he got started doing it. I'll let Brittany maybe jump in and add a few little notes. I'm sure she's got some stories.
Well, to be hitting a stage like that, Brittany, you know, to be going off like that right off the top, especially not knowing whether or not you've got enough material to do a show like that.
Absolutely. It was, we didn't know what we were heading into when we were crossing the border going down to Nashville, but like the most amazing memories, sitting outside on the street doing busking for hours, and then the same thing.
You talked about that a lot. Yeah.
Oh, and just the best memories come out of those just unexpected moments. And we had so many of those along the way. So
What was your feeling when you got up on the stage? What were you guys like backstage? Were you like, so did you have any anxiety going on to the stage?
You know what? I always had anxiety after a show. I was always pretty calm going into a show, and James was probably the opposite. He was a little more nervous before a show. And once he got up there, he was just, just camera and lights on. So he was just in his element, right? So, no, it was just amazing to watch him develop from that moment going to Nashville, and just not that he didn't have the bug before then, but just when we went there and then throwing himself into songwriting, and he just was so proud and of his writing and the songs and the people that he got the chance to write with, and just the community that he was a part of through all of it. It was really special to watch and to be a part of. Yeah.
Did you write music as well?
You know what? I always shied away from it, and then it is one of my regrets that I didn't take him up on the offer, because he did always ask. Yeah.
When did you remember the first time he ever took pen to paper? Do you remember?
I remember the first time that he ever played me one of his songs, and it would have been, I think, One of These Days. And he ended up recording that, and we got the chance to play that on stage at the Center and Square, so for an event. So that was amazing to watch that song kind of grow a little bit and watch his skills develop. And he really worked at it. He spent a lot of time writing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the one thing he would talk about a lot, mm-hmm. is what writing did for him and how much it meant for him. And just to see, he just said to hear the song being played on the radio the very first time.
Absolutely.
And that moment between the two of you, he talked about that a lot.
And there are so many songs that we just don't have them, right? It's like, One of the biggest regrets we have is that when he passed, his iPhone locked up and we haven't been able to get it unlocked. And we're certain there's dozens and dozens of at least partial songs on there.
Oh.
And he wrote some amazing songs. Mm-hmm. And when he died, he was in the process of recording an EP with Jason Berry. And he had six songs down. They weren't completely mixed or finished yet. I think I sent them to you in an email. And they were fantastic.
Yeah, really good songs. And we're going to be playing quite a few of them, if that's okay with you.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which one was your favorite out of those six, Ken?
Wow. Maybe one that he had is called A Long Way to Fall.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a real hard driving country song. Brittany, what about you?
I would say kind of maybe of the newer stuff, he had a song Hard to Leave, which is another kind of like rocking kind of one, or on the total other kind of spectrum. That's the acoustic I was really in love with In Time. So that was it's a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song. Absolutely beautiful.
Everything around me, every single sign, and every time I see you, my heart comes alive. Everything about me always seems so strong. What you don't know is how I've come along. From the moment I met you, I could feel the fire. And my heart's been waiting for a sign. And everyone thinks that I'm crossed a line. Well, they could call me crazy, but you'll be mine in time. I've never told you that you're pretty. Girl, I hope you already know. And my heart's been racing, and it's ready, set, go. Stay.
and that's the James I know. He was turning a new leaf when it come to just how far he'd come in his writing. And that's what he was so excited about the last conversation I had with him. And
yeah, it is funny, his evolution as a songwriter, because the first CD that he recorded, I think it was called One of These Days, Brett, is that what it was called? And I think there was one song on there that he wrote that was up-tempo, and the rest of them were all kind of slow ballads. And maybe it was, maybe, and someone can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe as a very young songwriter, it's maybe easier to write ballads. And so then when he started putting together material for the CD he was working on, it was mostly up-tempo and great stuff. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road, a year or two out, that maybe we can convince somebody who's on the radio to record one of them. And you know, I've often thought that if we can ever get there, that the family would be more than willing to just give the proceeds of a record like that to mental health
issues. Oh, that'd be so nice. That'd be so nice. You know, we'll see what we can do.
Would be great.
Because he's got some beautiful work there. I know when he was talking to me about it, and he was so excited about the music, but he said that he had touched a side of himself that he never thought he was capable of. That's why he was so excited. And that's where some of those ballads were coming in, because he just said that he just learned to tap into a side of himself that he just didn't think he was capable of doing. But that's what pen to paper did for him. And that's what he was so thrilled about. And he wanted me to hear some of the songs, and I never got them.
Do you remember where you met James the first time?
Oh, Kitchener. In Kitchener. Yeah. And I think that's when I met you, Brittany, at the same time. It was a good 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years ago?
Yeah.
I think 6 or 7 years.
Last time. You know, I had the pleasure of playing with them kind of on and off as I got married myself and had babies. And so he had quite a few members of the musician community and women musicians that he got to play with and had come play in the band as well. So
I met him, very first time I met him was with the Bareback Riders. And we just had such deep conversations, and he would call me often. That's what I loved, you know, was just that he was just so open and talking about his feelings, which was so...
Well, one of those, we're talking about some of the songs, of course, my mind's racing here, but one of the songs that we don't have recorded anywhere is a song he wrote called Half of My Heart.
Oh, yes.
And he had some interesting relationships. And he wrote about them, I think.
But yes, he did.
The tagline in this song for Half of My Heart was, half of my heart thinks I've gone crazy. The half that remains can't stop thinking about you, baby.
Yes, something similar to that. That one sounds really familiar.
Really familiar.
Well, he was, he always, when he got off stage, you know, because everybody loved him, because he was just so bright when he was on the stage. He just came to life, and he just loved that role. And you could tell he was just so at home on the stage. And then when he got off the stage, of course, he'd have quite a few of the women around him. And we used to tease him about that all the time. Colin and I used to talk about that.
Oh, me too.
So I guarantee you, Ken, there's a lot of songs.
Well, I remember the very first time he was going to take the stage in Guelph with the Bareback Riders. He was 18, and he had never played with them before. And the story goes that 2 weeks before the show, Colin sent him a list of about 16 songs, and he said, here, learn these.
I guess
2 days later, James sent an email back to Colin and said, here, learn these. So they're standing there playing their first set, and Mike McGrath was playing the guitar with them at the time, standing right beside James. And Mike tells this story that these girls were on the floor at the Stampede Ranch watching and looking up at him, and Mike says the tears were rolling down their face.
It's so true.
Oh my God.
It was a new
world.
And
you know, it was so funny to see the two sides kind of him as a musician too, because at the Stampede he had this big, huge persona with the full band, and then when we would go and do kind of the acoustic, like, duo shows,
he was a lot shyer.
Yeah, we could play those kind of songs he was working out, hashing out, you know, bust out his other genres that he liked to do, mashups and all those kinds of things. So it was just fun to watch his different personalities as he adapted to, you know, the gig that day.
I think he loved that idea of he wanted to become a producer. He really wanted to do that. Yeah. He really wanted to get into that aspect of it where he can mix his own music.
Yeah. He loved being in the studio. Yeah. So he loved the whole process of it for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. He loved Jason. And you know, he would talk about that. And he goes, one day I'm going to learn to be as good as him. And it's just like, he was always so like, he was like a sponge and always wanted to learn. And that's what I loved about him.
Yeah. He had a lot of plans though.
You know? A
but,
lot.
You know, in the end, you know, of course, as you look back now, 2.5 years later, you know, things leave signs, and there's, you know, there's maybe hints that maybe we could have picked up on, but you know, he lived at home with us still when he passed, and you know, I would get up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and look downstairs, and I could see the flashing lights from the television, and I would go downstairs and wake him up, tap him on the foot and say, go to bed. And he would get up and off he'd go. But, you know, he would come home at probably 3 o'clock in the morning with a, you know, a pepperoni pizza. And he would sit there and watch television and eat half the pizza and fall asleep in the chair. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think, you know, I think he, you know, like we talked about earlier, he was like two different people on and off the stage. Right.
Yeah. I noticed
probably a lot of musicians are like that.
Yeah, we talk a lot about it, and especially over, you know, the last 2.5 years, because it's really hard for people, especially when they have that kind of attention. You know, as a young artist, you immediately go to the stardom place. Like, you talk to everybody that you hear that I have on the show that are younger, will immediately say, we want the tour bus. We, you know, we just want to have fun. We want to do this. And it's just like, we can't wait till we're on a big stage like Jason Aldean or, you know, and it takes them years to realize that, you know, when you're going to get so many no's coming out that door and being able to understand why you're not getting played on the radio. And that was the one conversation I had a lot with him, because he would always contact me about that. And he'd say, I don't know what's wrong with this song. And he said, you know, I really was sure of this one. And I said to him, I said, you got to remember, there's only 20 slots for new singles. And I said, and what they do with that is radio tends to go with the newer, or sorry, the veterans, you know, the established artists that are putting out a new song. And there's, at that time too, there wasn't as many indie artists being played readily. It's very tough to get that spot. And I used to say that, and he goes, well, how can I break down that door? How can I break down that door? He was so frustrated with that end of it.
And, oh, 100%.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, and I'm not in the industry. I don't have a clue how it works. I mean, I would have done anything to help him, but I don't think it was necessarily about, you know, having money to help him. It was more like, you know, being in the right place at the right time, because I don't know how many times, you know, James and Brittany or the whole band would do a show and it would be like unbelievable. And I would always think to myself, like, why isn't anybody hearing this? How come somebody hasn't grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and said, okay, come on, son, you know, we're going to make you a star, just like in a movie, right?
Well, it's
but
hard.
I think he was pretty frustrated about the fact that he just kept, you know, doing the same things over and over again. I think he felt he just wasn't getting anywhere. He probably was. He was.
And that's what he would phone me for, because he just said, I just need that inspiration. I just need that injection of hope. When he would call me, that's what he called me. And I hear that from a lot of artists when I have them on the show, because to me, it's just, I've been in this business long enough, you know, to see so many people, like, look at Tim Hicks. It was 20 years. And he's so talented, you know, such an incredible writer himself. But, you know, it just took one song to get him there. And that's what people pay attention to. They forget the grind that you have to go through to get it, because the music industry wants turnkey. They want the branding already done. They want all the followers in place. They want you hungry enough where you're out there playing the gigs. You believe enough in yourself that you just continue to push and go for it, because you got to believe in yourself enough. And you'll hear so many, you know, artists that you think are brand new that are on radio today that aren't brand new. They have been doing it for 15 years and 10 years. He was still pretty young. And I kept trying to tell him that. I just said, you know, you just got to love what you're doing. Remember to continue to write, because you write because it feels good. If you're writing for that hit record, that's where, you know, there's a problem, right? You gotta just let it flow and then let that project go and then get yourself into more writing sessions and more writing sessions. And I believe that's what he was doing. You know, in the end, he was writing more, getting into write with other people more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was taking advantage of pretty much any and all opportunities to write with with anybody in the community. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just, I don't know if you know, if you noticed it as well, Brittany, as I did, is just that I think when he had gone from sports and really established his identity as that, that's what he was going to be doing. And I know that he loved music, but sports was his love at that time. And then it's like an artist now going through COVID. So many people went through the writer's block, dropped out altogether writing, and gave up on the dream because they didn't know their identity outside of music. If they weren't writing and they weren't on air and they weren't performing in festivals, they just didn't know how to function. And it brought out a lot of mental illness. And you hear that around the clock. That's why, you know, we have the hotlines that are out there now for the musicians, because it's so important to realize what they do go through.
Absolutely. And I think it's always been that way. It's always been such a struggle to get into the industry. It's always been such weird hours, you know, compared to everyone else out there. And just the last 2 years through the pandemic has just really highlighted that. And but it's always been a reality for people in the industry.
Mm-hmm. You being a mom and being able to have, you know, have your children and stuff like that, there was something else also in your life. For James, it was 100%. And
he was 100% all in to music. That is for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is some of the things that you notice? Because I think it's important that we have that conversation, because you know, we want to bring this to light. This show airs all over the world, and I think it's really important that we use this platform right now to maybe talk about some of the signs that you did notice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think unfortunately for my personal journey, even being so close with him in the band, I really didn't have a good idea of what was going on. I can say in 2020 hindsight that definitely when we had conversations, if they weren't music centric, they were pretty short, or he would just kind of give those kind of short closed off answers. Or if he was here to kind of hang out to practice, you know, he would just kind of go afterwards and not want to hang out and kind of talk about what else was kind of going on. So, you know, for me, looking back, that's kind of one of my big kind of signals and something I wish I had picked up on more, that unfortunately, you know, just being a new mom and being so busy that I feel like I just kind of didn't. I just said, okay, we're done practice, you know, see you next time. And so, yeah, for me, I think I wish I had pushed him, and I think Dad probably feels the same, just kind of pushed him to talk a little bit more. I can say for sure towards the end here, he was shutting down, I think, a little bit in that way.
I just noticed it in the last conversation I had with him. I noticed that as well, because he just didn't know how to articulate his feelings like he normally did. Normally he was pretty open, and you know, when he called, and he just didn't really know what he wanted to talk about when I spoke to him.
That's one of the things I've been writing about periodically on my Facebook page. I don't write about it too much because I don't want people to think, oh, there's Ken again, you know, feeling blue. And it's like, you know, I write and I say that I'm trying to speak directly to parents. And I'm saying, you know, no matter what your kids are pursuing, what their interests are, when you sit and talk to them and you ask them how they're doing, how are things at school, how are things at their jobs, whatever, don't, when they say, oh, they're fine, everything's fine, don't
don't just stop at, okay, things are fine and move on, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you've got to really talk to these kids, and especially now through what we've gone with COVID in the last 2 or 3 years, right?
100%.
You know, a lot of kids, not just musicians, but athletes and scholars and all of them, I mean, their lives have been upset mm-hmm. and they're not all good. And, you know, so it's like, you know, as a parent, like, you know, do I wish I had have, you know, sat down with them and delved a lot deeper? Absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. You just don't get any do-overs from this type of event and this type of trauma.
Yeah, and there's nothing, you know, yeah, there's nothing worse than, you know, the pain of a parent. It's so unimaginable to lose your child. And it's important for you as well, Ken, and for you, Brittany, to voice it. I worked speaking across Canada for the Never Be a Victim program. And I would go in and talk to a lot of the teens and the kids right from kindergarten up. And we would talk about this stuff because it was so important that they are able to go home and have that conversation. But when the economy hit where you have two working parents, very difficult because a lot right. of the kids are coming home to no parents at home. They're coming home to going on the computer, and their life, the way that they look at themselves, is based on their friends, based on the people that they're surrounded with, and has nothing to do with the family whatsoever. And
well, you have to look at other things too. I mean, yeah. I'd heard this years before James died, but I had heard, you know, the people that sort of have this idea in their head that they're going to harm themselves, that they start giving their things away. I don't know if you've ever heard that mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
But it was only after James died when we started looking for things. And it's like, he had one guitar. Like, we know he had 3 or 4 guitars, right?
Mm-hmm.
His laptop is gone. His golf clubs are gone. His goalie equipment is gone.
Wow.
And it's like, oh. Mm. Oh. You know, okay. And I've heard this before about people that start selling off things that, you know, mean that much to them because they figure they're just not going to be around long enough to enjoy them much longer. So they get rid of them. And, you know.
Did they tell you what the thought process is behind that for somebody who is thinking that way? Did anybody tell you?
No, not really. I don't know. And what? It's just, but if you happen to notice that about someone that you care about, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've also thought that you know, if you think you know somebody's personality mm-hmm. because you've known them for years, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you're having a conversation or two, and they just don't seem right. There's mm-hmm. something going on, right? You even just mentioned that earlier, that the last time you spoke to James, maybe 2 weeks before he died,
mm-hmm.
that you felt that he was having a hard job expressing himself. And that's not really him, is it?
No, because he was so talkative with me all the time.
Right.
And, you know, he'd either reach out by text or he'd reach out, you know, by phone. And, you know, when I spoke to him that particular time, you know, he had just said that, I just wanted to call. And, you know, he said, I don't know really why I called.
Yeah.
And so when he said that, I was just like, you know, what's happening? Like, what's happening? Are you writing? So I just kind of, you know, tried to bring it to a place where it would maybe start the base to get him into a conversation that was lighter. And he said, yeah, I've been writing. He said, I don't know. I just can't. He said, I don't know. And then he just kept talking like that, which was not like mm-hmm. him, not like him at all. And he just said, well, I'm going to go. Like, I think what Brittany was talking about is like, he'll get shorter. And so that's when I right. knew, and I kept texting and, you know, just saying, are you okay? And he did reach back out to me. And I think it was the last night he performed. He reached back out to me and he said, oh, I'm doing good. I'm going on stage. And I said, is everything okay? And he goes, yeah, I'm just getting ready. I'm just so excited to get up there. That's why I was so surprised.
Right.
And,
right.
but I knew in my gut, and that's why I kept reaching out and just saying to him, are you okay? Like, is everything okay? Like, you know, you can call me anytime. And I always told him that. And, he just said, yeah, I will. I'm going to call. He says, I look forward to that. And that's not mm-hmm. like him. He would normally say, you know what, I'm going to do that. Can you hang on? And he'd call me.
Yeah. And the other thing that I try and talk to parents about is that, you know, if you've got a child that is certainly on a certain path, whether it's music or sports or whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
you need to try and make sure that they've got a plan B, right?
It's for sure.
Because James had a plan A, and plan B was plan A. Mm-hmm. Plan C was plan A.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, when plan A wasn't coming through, he didn't really have anything else to sort of fall back on as a plan B. And I think that's really important as parents.
Mm-hmm.
To support your kids in whatever that they want to do, if you can, to whatever extent you can.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to, you know, I obviously learned the lesson the hard way, is because, you know, I knew his plan A was the only plan he had. And, you know, sometimes I wonder myself, you know, is it just my ears, because he's my kid, that I'm hearing this on stage? And I believed he was going to make it. So
a
we
lot
supported
of people
him.
Did. Yeah.
And so, you know, we just supported him with whatever he needed, whenever he needed it. And, you know, so maybe, you know, bad on me for having the rose-colored glasses that I didn't work hard to make sure that he didn't have a backup plan.
I wouldn't think that. The social network for teens today is so different than anything you experienced, Ken or I experienced. And even more, right. You know, than what Brittany's ever experienced. Just those few years. And it's just changed. When I would go into the school, just how girls would value themselves in grade 9 in comparison to grade 8 was based on if they let a boy go to a certain degree, right? If they let them go, you know, past a certain base. I'm just being polite about it. But the other girls would get really upset with them. And they would, it wasn't the guys that were putting the pressure. It was the girls. They were putting the pressure on the girls. And we don't see that as parents. We don't think that that's going on. But that's why when you were saying it's really important to have a conversation. I think what parents can do today is to sit down at the table every night and take that time to spend, if it's homework or dinner, because everybody's on the go for both parents. Like somebody's going to hockey practice, somebody's going to soccer practice. You know, it's just a very hard world for parents to be able to navigate and be there and have those conversations, but do it before they go to bed. I don't care. Like, take that time to sit down and say, you know, tell me about your day, and just make it a routine. Become a friend.
Absolutely. I think even being like a new mom, my oldest is only just about 5, but I consciously make an effort. Like every day she comes home from school to ask her how her day was, what happened, how she felt about it, that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, I think it is partially because of what has happened with James and to our family that I'm, you know, even more hyper aware of her emotions and what she's going through. And even at 5.
So, mm-hmm. And I think it's important when they're going into, you know, school, especially, you know, grade 5, is talk about their friends. Really important to know who the friends are. And that's the one thing that we would teach all the time, is get to know who they're hanging around, but do it casually, not nosy, right? You do it casually where you're talking about, hey, who did you hang out with at school today? Like, did you guys play at recess? Whatever it is. So you know what's happening. So you can see if your child's changed that day. So maybe something happened at school and they're sad and don't want to talk. That's that open door, because you know who their friends are. You know, to go in and have a conversation where they become, where they can feel safe telling you what's happened at school, you know, on that level. And I think that's really key, because a lot of that pressure, you know, things that you know, maybe James was going through, that I felt he was going through, had a lot to do with his identity outside of, if he wasn't writing, he wasn't a hockey player, he wasn't singing, who was he? That's what he struggled with, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And the unfortunate thing is, because if he had talked to us about what he was feeling, or about those feelings of not feeling like maybe he had more of an identity, we could tell him that he did. We could tell him that he was the most amazing uncle. You know, we could tell him that he was someone who gave back, you know, just easily. He would have been the first person to sign up to do a fundraiser gig like we are next week. So he was so much more than just a performer. And, you know, when he passed away, I don't know how I did it, but I spoke at his funeral, and that is what I said. Like, he was just so much more than red pants up on the stage, and that's how I remember him mm-hmm. now. Yeah.
And that's yeah. important too, and all those trips to Florida and Oklahoma. And he yeah. would talk about that and sing in the country and the pop and the Broadway tunes.
Oh, that's funny. He told you that.
Oh, yeah.
We used to go back and forth in the Chrysler Caravan, play the soundtrack from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat or Phantom of the Opera or whatever it was.
It was either that or the goalie documentary.
Oh, yes. I remember that. I remember that. Well, because he said, Jennifer, and you, Brittany, you had one role in the Broadway tunes. And he would talk about that.
Well, you should have seen this. When he was young and he first started singing with Brittany, I had a client appreciation event in a theater, and they would always let us put on a little variety show before it would start. And they were going to do a song from Chicago. I think it was called "They Both Reached for the Gun."
Yeah.
And Brittany, it was like almost like a ventriloquist act where Brittany was sitting on a chair and James was sitting on her knee, and she would sing a line and he would sing a line. It was hilarious. But he really got the bug. You know, when he was very young, my father, James's grandfather, used to put on a Canada Day variety show up at his trailer at Pike Lake.
What you talked about. He started singing. Tell fans that.
He started singing Toby Keith songs, and he was probably, Brittany, how old was he? Like 8?
He said he was like 9 or 10.
I would say less than 10 for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So here he wants to sing Who's Your Daddy? Right? So he's up on stage and he's bumping and grinding. And he gets to the part where it says, what is it? You know you want it, so come and get it.
Oh, wow.
And he's thrusting his hips all over the place. And he's like 9 years old. And I think that's where he probably got the bug, I think.
Yeah. You're right.
The crowd went crazy for it. And he liked that. He liked to perform.
Oh, and, too funny.
Funny because, you know, he was actually pretty well-rounded. And he was obviously drawn to country,
mm-hmm.
but he loved Michael Bublé, and he told us many times he would love to play on a stage with sing on a stage with an orchestra. Isn't that funny?
It doesn't surprise me.
but his mother will say the same thing. Like when he would sit at home and sing on the karaoke machine, and he would be singing like "Save the Last Dance for Me" or "Home" by Michael Bublé or whatever.
What was the song that your wife played over and over again? There was one that she used to play back to back.
Oh.
Oh.
That he would sing?
Yeah. He just said that he got to know it and appreciate it because he would listen to his mom play it. I'm trying to think of it. I'll remember it and I'll let you know because he used
Isn't
to talk about
it. Isn't it sweet that we get to hear these kinds of things? Because we have no idea, but that's sweet that he would say that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm gonna say this too, you know, the tragedy that we're, you know, living out right now, I've also come to recognize as a family how lucky we are for social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there's other families that have obviously lost people the same way, and the tragedy is just the same,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have the thousands of photos. They don't have the hundreds of video clips that we have,
mm-hmm.
right? It's taken a while to actually start to watch them,
but I have imagine.
Them. I'm saving them all, of course, but you know, I really feel for people that have, you know, parents that have lost young people, and of course they've got some photos, but they don't have the video where they can actually sit down and watch their kids perform, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what a bittersweet blessing that is.
I know that one of the favorite memories, because it was a question that he heard me ask a lot in interviews, was what was your favorite family memory? And that's when he would talk about Florida and Oklahoma. And those
That's
road trips
crazy.
And singing, you know, as a family, singing with his siblings was his favorite memory.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, sure. And there would be, you know, Brittany and James singing away. And then our middle child, Jennifer,
mm-hmm.
Can sing too, but she won't sing.
I know. That's what he would say.
So we,
what position my wife he would try to put her in and get her to sing. Yeah.
Yeah. We would just listen to the three of them singing, and it was, you know, it certainly made the trips go a lot better, but,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He, He had a love for family, and you guys all meant so much to him because that was just one of his highlights. And I think, you know, Colin could tell you that too. You know, he would just, that's the one thing that he would ground. He said, that's the one thing I have is a good family.
Wow.
And because a lot of people would talk to him, you know, after the show. And that's what I'm saying, for us, maybe not with you guys as much, but for many of us that knew him, he would talk pretty deep.
Right.
And that's what he talked about. And he would talk about his family and how grounded, you know, his family was and how supported he felt in his family. Right. And that's when he would be open about his mental illness and his struggles, because he would just say, I just don't know why I feel the way I do.
Well,
he says, I don't know if I was born that way. That's what he said.
That's why as a family, we feel it's important for us to do what we can to give back to mm-hmm. the, you know, the Waterloo Region Suicide Prevention Council, because, you know, we didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, my wife and I met a month ago with another family here in Waterloo who lost a 22-year-old daughter to suicide, and they went a completely different route. They, you know, they worked for almost a year trying to get help for their child and couldn't save her. And for us, we didn't get a chance. It was just, wow, mm-hmm. you know, like getting hit over the head with a 2x4.
Yeah, and that opens up a pain all its own. Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I like to say is that, you know, we're not going to be able to help everybody.
No.
But if we can help anybody, it's okay. Right. I mean, if we can shine a light on this through the fundraiser next week and give a little bit of money to the council so that they can continue their good works.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can save one child, then, you know, let's do it. And,
well, if we can spend our life, and I used to say this all the time, if you walk down the street and you bump somebody's shoulder and you don't stop and say, are you okay? I'm really sorry about that. You don't know what that person's going through. And they might 100%. Not have been looking with their head down. And it just takes 2 seconds for people, you know, just to take a look around you. If you see somebody, just walk over. Just, it doesn't take anything of our time to say, hey, are you okay? And just to be recognized is what stops them. And a lot of situations, because they just feel invisible, and especially with what's gone on in COVID, being isolated even more, they don't have that socialization that they were having, you know, with their friends, which is what their whole identity was. And, you know, to take that away from them too, that's why we lost so many people, you know, over COVID. It's just really tough time. And now I'm hoping that we can open up that communication and use this platform and this special event and allow the light to be shining on places like the Waterloo Region Suicide Prevention Council and so many of the other hotlines. And I'm going to be putting those on the article as well that I'm writing for Now and Then magazine, because it's so important that people know the regions and numbers that they can call. Put it in your phone. Always have it there. If you suspect or something might be happening, or, you know, a lot of the time people might start out with self-harm first, and it might be an eating disorder. It could be somebody losing their job. You know, it can be anybody of all ages. I've seen, you know, husbands just in this last year, just in the last couple months, who have taken their lives just because they didn't have any identity of how to take care of their family with the pressures of finance. There's just so many things that we need to be aware of. It can be situational. People don't have to have depression or other mental illnesses that they're born with. It can be situational. It could be a breakup.
Absolutely. And you know, I think something else that I've noticed is just all these charities and organizations that are there to help people through their own mental health journey. They're also there to help people like myself and dad and our family who are walking through this in the aftermath. And you know, I've now taken part in a few of these sessions and courses, and what they do is so important. So
it does. And they don't get enough recognition of, and it's around the clock work of volunteers that do this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if we can, like Dad said, if we can do anything to give back, and if it might make a difference for one family, that's what we're gonna do.
I'd love to get you in touch with Andy Kim. And he does
Rock Me Gently?
Yes.
That Andy Kim.
Sugar, sugar. Yeah.
I love him.
He does a very special show at Christmas every year, and it's
right.
about this. And he has artists that come on, Bare Naked Ladies, and so many that come forward to do this show, Glass Tiger. But I think that's really important, and I would love to get you guys in touch with him and maybe be a part of that show.
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do. Definitely. Now let's go over this event again. This show is honoring James Life, and we're talking about the Bareback Riders, who he was the lead singer for quite a few years, and they're going to be performing as well. Who are the other bands that are going to be playing, Brittany?
Yeah, so we've got Fred Smith, my dad mentioned, who is James's guitar teacher. He's going to be out doing an acoustic set. And then we've also got the Godfreys, who were part of the JCB band for quite some time with James as well. So they're going to be playing earlier in the evening, and then Bareback Riders are going to be playing the later half of the night and closing out into the morning.
Which is so amazing. And the concert is called The Concert of Hope at the Stampede Ranch, right? And that is on Saturday the 25th at 7:30. The doors open?
Yeah, doors open at 7:30 and music starts at 8:30.
We're talking about the online auctions. Let's talk about those, because those are available right now. And where can people go right now?
Yeah, so what you're going to want to do is either go through Facebook and look up the Red Pants Nation, A Concert for Hope, Healing, and Education, or search that same thing on Eventbrite. Both of those pages are going to link you out to our online auction. It's been open for about a week, and it's open until the 26th at noon. We've got some awesome items up there for bid, including two tickets to the Leafs in November 2023. We've got a fully signed Winnipeg Jets jersey. That's a Mark Scheifele jersey, who James had the honor of playing hockey with for over 10 years here locally.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, and we've got VIP passes to the 2023 Canadian Open. So something for everyone. If you like sports, if you like live entertainment, all proceeds for this as well are going to be going to the Waterloo Region Suicide Prevention Council. So, and yeah, it's going to be open right through the fundraiser, and you just need to follow the QR codes to get there.
And there's no better place to do this event than the Stampede Ranch, because that is where James loved to play. And he got to play with you, Brittany, so many times there. And it was just so important when it comes to this. It's such a special show. I'm going to have all of the crisis numbers that are there. So the emotional support, that the resources that are available, especially to musicians, I think that's really important, is the www.musiciansclinic.com. And they can be reached at 905-574-1119. I'm going to have a whole bunch of them up there. The Canadian Mental Health Hotline as well. We also have the Provincial Mental Health Hotline. And there's some new, they have the new Canadian Suicide Prevention Service that's brand new. And they're offering different services for the family members as well as kids from all ages and adults. So pretty amazing resources that are out there. And we just want to encourage everybody to get these tickets. I want everybody to share this page. We all know somebody. We all know somebody, whether or not it's an acquaintance, it's a friend, a coworker, family member that has mental illness. And we got to remove that stigmatism and just be there as kind, caring people. That's what we're born for. And that's what we should be doing at every breath that we take, is just to be there for one another and just care. And that's, I think, we just need to do a lot more of. And this event is so special. So thank you guys so much for coming on the show. And we're going to be doing
Thank you so much for having us to
kick this off. And we're going to have a lot of James music that you're going to be listening to on this show as well. So we're going to be able to play so much for this very, very special artist that touched our hearts. And that is country artist, singer-songwriter James Cameron.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Kim. It's amazing. Thank you so much for your help with this.
Not a problem. Big hugs to everyone. Give your wife a big hug for us. And we love you all.
I will.
And
thank you
so much for coming on to do this. And he would be so proud of you all. He'll be so proud of you.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for being his friend.
Oh,
yeah.
Obviously, he confided in you a lot.
I'm grateful, you know, to him. It's the other way around. He was just such a special, special light. And I am just so grateful, you know, to have him as a friend. It was very important to me.
Nice. Well, thanks again. Oh,
moonlit stars against your eyes, trying to sneak out late at night and find a favorite spot, try to not get caught. When I got you next to me, I can't help but believe that someday you might be the most important part of me. And I'll be the one to change your world if you promise that you'll be my girl from now on. Every day will be like a first day, baby. I got your back if you got mine. I hope that I'm not out of line, but by saying that I love you, but I do. When it comes to loving you, there's not much more that I can do. Girl, you stole my heart, and it's just the start. I can't help but wanna be everything you'll ever need. Just let me in your seat. I wear my heart upon my sleeve. I'll be the one to change your world if you promise that you'll be my girl from now on. Every day will be like a first day, baby. I got your back if you got mine, and I hope that I'm not out of line, well, by saying that I love you. But I do, girl. I'll be the one to change your world if you promise that you'll be my girl from now on. Every day will be like a first day, baby. And I got your back if you got mine, and I hope that I'm not out of line, well, by saying that I love you. But I do. Yeah, yeah. You know I do. Girl, I love you. Oh, you know I do.
You all can help with a call to action by supporting this special night, the Concert of Hope, at the Stampede Ranch in Guelph, Ontario, on Saturday, June 25th. The doors open at 7:30, and you're going to listen to some incredible live music that starts at 8:30, with special performances including the Bareback Riders. James Cameron was the lead singer for many years, and the Bareback Riders are honoring their bandmate, our friend always, James Cameron. This concert is being held on the 25th, so get your tickets now and share it on all of your social medias. This is one way that we can support and help spread the word of education as well as love and compassion, so that we can help and give back to those who are suffering right now. Someone that might be standing right beside you, a friend that you may not even know is suffering with mental illness, a colleague, a family member. Before it's too late, let's have our voices heard and our ears open so that we can start the conversations that are necessary to help stop suicide. We can all show our support by coming out to the Concert of Hope for live music and the incredible live auction that's going on right now and will end on Sunday at noon. A great big thank you to my very special guest, James' father, Ken Cameron, and his sister, Brittany Hagen, for coming on the show. This is a very difficult show, a very difficult subject, but there's so much that we can offer in hope and in prayers for one another. Proceeds from both the online auction and concert will be going to the Waterloo Region Suicide Prevention Council. So that's one way that we can help. And this Concert of Hope is healing, hope, and education. There is no better place to do that than the Stampede Ranch, and that is in Guelph, Ontario, where James loved to play music and give back. This concert is in honor of James Cameron, who lost his life to suicide. If you or someone you know is in crisis or needs emotional support, these resources can help. You can go to musicsclinic.com for any musician that might be struggling with mental illness and just needs some help. Or you can call 1-905-574-1119. You can also go to CanadianMentalHealthHotline.com. Or you can go to the Provincial Mental Health Hotline and you can reach them at 1-855-242-3310. There's also a new resource, the New Canadian Suicide Prevention Service, CSPS. enables callers anywhere in Canada to access crisis support using the technology of their choice. You also can contact them at 1-833-456-4566. It has been an honor to do this show. I'm really hoping that we can work together to make a difference. I have some amazing artists that I will be interviewing this month and the month of July. I'll be chatting with Katie Hurt, Katie Topham, Rob Fitzgerald, High Valley, rock band Taming Sari, Matt Rogers, Josh Bogart, Petrick, Kelly Prescott, Quinton Blair, Australian country artist Haley Jensen, Australian trio The Buckleys, Cadence from Runaway Angel, The Prairie State, Emerson Drive, Gil Grand, Ali Walker, Simone Fuller, Tyler Joe Miller, Dustin Bird, Could Do, and so many more. Don't forget you can catch all my shows that you don't want to miss on musicsjourney.com. You also can check out all the articles, the new releases, new videos, and reviews at nowandthenmagazine.com. For tonight's show, just make sure you check out my personal pages for Now and Then Magazine on Facebook and Music's Journey Podcast on Facebook, and you can get all the details to this very special concert. Well, that's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning into Music's Journey, and have yourselves a wonderful evening. I will catch you here next time on Music's Journey. I have some very special songs that I'm going to be playing at the end of this interview, and these are the unreleased songs. They haven't been mixed or anything. These are just the special recordings that we have found for James Cameron, and his family would love us to play these for you, so I hope you enjoy. That's it for me, Kim Sear, here on Music's Journey.
You're the perfect kind of sting. The kind of makes you start to think, yeah, that the pain's worth it. I can still feel the burn while I'm haunted by the hurt of you leaving. Maybe I deserved it. Well, I'm sitting here all alone, just me and your memory, staring at the phone. Are you out there moving on with another me? Your heart's long gone. Are you doing things we used to do? Why does he get the best of you? Cause when I go out, all that I can see are those big blue eyes staring back at me. I'm still buzzing all the years we I'm still drunk on you. Are you high on me? Yeah, we went up in flames. I'm a match, your gasoline. Yeah, you know our love is dangerous. But that's why I can't let go. I still crave the long gone. Are you doing things we used to do? Why does he get the best of you? Cause when I go out, everything I see reminds me of all those memories. I'm still buzzing all the years we used to be. I'm still drunk on you. Are you high? I'm still drunk. sitting here on a Friday night, thinking about you and how everything is going all right. Well, maybe, maybe, maybe later tonight I'll look in your eyes and I'll say it. Every time you walk through the door, my knees get weak, my heart skips a beat. You leave me wanting more. Oh, baby, 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 it's your kind of love that's got me going, going crazy. My kind of love is all wrapped up in a holy pair of jeans, spending Friday nights out on the town, but Sunday's here with me. I don't need much, just want her to want me to. Oh, my kind of love is oh so beautiful, kind of like you. Don't seem to care. You go out dancing all night long, but you always wind up here. Well, I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready. I'm ready to be your number one. When you're ready to let me, well, my kind of love is all wrapped up in a holy pair of jeans. Spend a Friday night out on the town, but Sunday's here with me. I don't need much, just want her to want me to. Well, my kind of love is oh so beautiful, kind of like you. Well, I don't know if I could ever see me standing here without you next to me. Well, my kind of love is all wrapped up in a holy pair of jeans, spending Friday nights out on the town, but Sunday's here with me. I don't need much, just want her to want me to. Well, my kind of love is oh so beautiful. Well, my kind. Kind of like you. Kind of like you.